We are on Das Samaches on the days. If I were to give the shir today a title, it would be of Mice and Men. So you'll see why in a second. We are approximately 10-12 lines up before they get wide on Samaches on the days, with the words Hahu Achbara. Hahu Achbara. There's the mouse. Okay. Are there any beer drinkers here? Let me start. No other beer drinkers? Would you drink beer? Would you drink your beer if a mouse fell into it?
Definitely.
So I think that at least to appreciate this Gemara, one has to understand two things that may be related in the contemporary period. We are fortunate enough, most of us, to be relatively socioeconomically well off, which allows us to be a little choosier or pickier in terms of food that we might choose not to eat. The Gemara at the end of Gittin, it gives a mashal about people. I don't want to explain what the mashal was about, what it was being applied to, but the mashal was there are three kinds of people in terms of how they respond when a fly falls into their wine. There are the people who are normal, there are people who are particularly finicky and mifunah, and there are people who are crude. The normal people take the spoon, and they spoon the fly, and they toss it out, and they drink the rest of the wine. The finicky people, the mafunak, can't bear that at all, so he just spills all the wine out. And the crude person, first he extracts the fly from the wine, sucks the wine off the fly, then tosses the fly away and drinks the rest of the wine. So I think that we're kind of not too many of us fall into that third category. While once upon a time, a Gemara assumed that typical people would have drunk the rest of the wine after spooning the fly out and tossing it away. So today, I suspect that more of us fall in that category of just spilled a cup of wine out. But if your food or beverage was particularly valuable, that might not have been a luxury that you had.
Is this a dead mouse or a live? Okay.
There's an old line about what's worse than finding a worm in an apple? A living half worm in an apple. Okay. So I think the Achbar is dead. We're going to assume the Achbar is dead. So Hu Achbar denafal lechavita de shikra. That Achbar fell into a barrel of wine. Okay, and in fairness here, by the way, this is not a cup of wine. This is a barrel of wine. Now, it may be a barrel of wine, not A, because that was the case, but B, if we're going to talk about bittel, if we need bittel, if we need a shir of shishim, you're not going to have 60 times the beer in your beer mug if a mouse falls in there, to nullify the mouse. But ahu achbar denafal l'shichra, the chavita l'shichra, asrei rav lahu shichra. Rav prohibited drinking the beer. Now, the first question that the Rishonim address here, before we go into any details, let's assume for the moment that mice enhance the flavor of beer. Now, I can't comment on that personally, but we live in a culture where people do not eat mice. Mice are generally things to be trapped. And in case interesting to know, by the way, the Gemara later is going to distinguish between two kind of mice. One is an achra de davra, and one is an achra de masa, the field mouse and the city mouse. But the field mouse, according to Rashi, which the Gemara says, I think is actually quite good, Rashi uses the word, it looks like he's talking about a squirrel. So I just have to personally say, as a resident of Teaneck, I object to this. The term we use to describe squirrels in Teaneck, the ones particularly that try to chew into your garbage, is we call them rats with bushy tails. But that's what they are. They are rodents, and no matter how cute they look, they are not cute. So anyway, but the Gemara distinguishes between two kinds of mice. But let's assume for the moment that we're dealing with a mouse that might potentially enhance the flavor of beer. But the question that the Rishonim immediately ask here is, if a mouse falls into beer, presumably the beer is not hot, nor is the mouse hot. So how does a transfer of flavor take place between two substances that are cold? In other words, you reach in, you pull the mouse out, done. Okay. It's one thing if the beer were boiling, if this mouse were a super hot mouse, and it were Yad Soledesva, it would be kind of an interesting mouse. But nonetheless, it had just flown in from outer space and it lost its heat shield, okay? But it didn't burn up totally. So you have this super hot mouse that I would understand, but you're dealing with things that are tsonin bitsonin. And in Yoredea, we usually assume that tsonin bitsonin is not balea. It doesn't absorb if two things are cold.
But
yes, Marshall?
I mean, we've all had the smell of a decomposing rodent in our lives. Isn't there an argument that that's sort of harif, and that it's actually a decomposing?
Well, you've already made an assumption. You don't have to get to the harif part for there. First, it's not. I don't know. I just actually had this chus this week, by the way. I don't know how many of you will remember to appreciate this. We learned this in the second parak. Marshall made reference to a davar harif. One of the things about a sharp food, and the people who work in the kitchen know this problem, is that, let's say, if you cut a sharp food with a knife, let's milchix or fleishix, even though the knife is clean and even though the knife hasn't been used in more than 24 hours, right. We say that the davar harif turns the negative flavor, the nosein tam of gam, which is our sugya, it turns it into a positive flavor. The only place in Shas where the Gemara says that explicitly is by a substance known as chilpis, and the Gemara is found not in Chulin in the typical Yerideh sugyas, it's found at the end of the second parak here, because the Mishnah made reference to this chilpis. Chilpis is a substance known as asafetida, which is the sap of a... sap of a rhizome, and I actually tasted some this week. One of my colleagues who was teaching Yerideh, Rabbi Ezra Schwartz. So I've done Yerideh tastings with Davar Harif before, but we never got chiltas. And the truth is, it had it. It is kind of, it's more vile to your breath. It's nowhere near as sharp actually as onions or garlic or horseradish. Nowhere near as sharp. It's not. It doesn't leave your. I'm sensitive to very spicy foods. And it doesn't touch your sinus at all, but it leaves this aftertaste. Just so you know, if you're interested, it actually can be purchased. It's used primarily, I think, in Indian cuisine. I think it's native originally to Iran, but it's primarily used in Indian cuisine. And apparently it's used for umami, to hit your umami taste buds. When you mix it, when it's maybe cooked and it's with other stuff, it actually doesn't have quite this, leave this horrible, horrible aftertaste in your mouth. But it's probably very effective in warding off disease because nobody will come near you after you've consumed it. So Marshall asked about davar harif. So I don't think a decomposing mouse is technically a davar harif. It's disgusting, but that's not, unless we change our definition of what harif means, that I don't think it would be sharp. And one would even argue that if the mouse is decomposing, it's totally inedible. It's like nevela srucha, in which case, if you wanted to take it out and consume it in its own right, it should be technically permissible. But you do point to the more relevant piece here, which is, in order for that mouse to be decomposing, assuming your beer doesn't serve as a preservative to alcohol, in order for that mouse to be decomposing, it means it must have been sitting there a while. So I said a moment ago that in order for things to absorb, there has to be heat. Heat can typically be one of two things, bishul or tzli. Bishul is cooking with a liquid, and tzli is roasting dry. The Gemara in Perek Yud Hanash and Chulin makes the following observation, I think it's in the name of Shmuel, that maliach kiboteach and kavush is kimavushal. Maliach, if you salt something, very, very salty, however you define that, that is considered as if it is already hot. So it can cause absorptions, even though, based upon the thermometer, it might still be room temperature. And kavush is kimavusha. If you pickle something, then it, in fact, is as if you cooked it together. Now, what is the definition of pickling? So we would think that pickling would typically be in salt water, or in brine, vinegar, something like that. And that is true, kavush is kimavusha. But the Rishonim say that even if you soak something in a liquid for 24 hours, for sharp, for things like vinegar and salt water, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, the amount of time it would take to boil up the water, that already is kavush kimavushal. But if you're dealing with something that's not sharp, not vinegar, not salt water, if you take a piece of meat, for example, and you drop it in, I know this is horrifying, but you put it into a bowl of milk, and you leave it there for a while, until 24 hours, you pull it out, you rinse it off, and the milk, theoretically, if you don't taste the milk in it, we assume that it's fine, we don't assume kavush kimavushal. After 24 hours, and it's this very odd din, because it's like an on-off switch, right? Yeah. You would think it shouldn't...
It's binary, not continuous.
What's that?
It's binary.
Correct, and it doesn't make sense as such in the real world, but we say once it's been soaking 24 hours, kavush is kimavushal. So Tosa says this has to be a case where the mouse was in the beer for Emei Eslais or something like that. So if you take a look at Tosfos, Hahu Achbara, the Nafal Begochavita de Shikra, Asri Ravlu Shikra. It's the fourth Tosfos on the bottom. Tema tatsone mitsonehu. It's cold and cold, so what's the concern? Take the mouth out, and there's no transfer of flavor. The lishteri, it should be permitted. The shlomar, the maybe shishar sham yom o yomayim. I don't know what Tosin meant, that literally yom o yomayim is Chazal's interpretation in the Pasuk in Mishpatim is 24 hours. Ezel yom shehuki yomayim. Or yom, I forget which way it goes, but it means may es lay. So Tosa says, if it's there, a day or two, okay, so that has to be the case, that a huchavita, it was in that chavis for 24 hours.
So what are the guidelines if you soak something in water for 24 hours? Is it considered like cooking?
Yes, so I'll tell you where this issue comes up. It usually doesn't come up with the water. It comes up in washing the lettuce before Pesach. So sometimes you like to take the lettuce and you might put it in water with some vinegar. And the question, I don't know how much vinegar technically is necessary, but if you put in a real amount of vinegar, there's a limit to how long you're allowed to leave it soaking in the water, because otherwise the lettuce will now, technically speaking, take on the status of mevushal. Yeah. And you can't use lettuce which is mevushal.
But without vinegar, just soaking in water?
Water, you can leave it up to 24 hours. When I was in Yeshiva Ketana, that's what they told us, and that is the thing. It's probably mentioned in Shulchan Aruch. Yeah,
because I bought a regular horseradish before a Pesach, and it seems very dry because they probably cut it months in advance, and I was going to soak it in water, and then I looked up someplace and said, no, soaking in water is like cooking.
It was every 24 hours, right? I won't comment. I want to just make clear, I'm not commenting on the fact that horseradish and the connection with horseradish and Mar. I'm going to leave that aside. No comment on that, but I don't want my shtika to be taken code off. Okay. So, if it were Mara, okay? if it is Mara, I don't want to use the subjunctive there, then soaking in 24 hours would technically be a problem. Yes. Okay. But you could soak it 23 hours, 59 minutes, and 59 seconds.
And you covered.
Yeah.
Marshall. We actually went pretty quickly over alive versus dead, but doesn't it have to be dead? I mean, if an animal runs through something for a second...
Yeah, it is. No, I'm assuming it's... Marshall, I'm assuming it's dead.
Jumps in and jumps out. Would you just say a whole hobby of wine has to be thrown out? Right. Alive mouse doesn't...
Right, but even if it were dead and fell in and you took it out immediately, also wouldn't be an issue. Right? My assumption is, but I don't know...
Alive is much more... Remember, in the olden days, there were animals, weevils, things in everything, and you sorted it all the time. When we were in Russia, there was rice. It was filled with worms. You didn't say the right trace that you trade for worms.
I agree. I said when you don't have the luxury of throwing away food, then you remove whatever it is, the offending substances, and you eat it.
Right.
Yes.
And it kind of has to be a decomposing that second.
Well, so I think let's say for 24 hours, that's sufficient, right? But the mouse that just fell in, that's what, and all the Rishonim, I don't think anybody disagrees with this, all the Rishonim say that if it falls in and it hasn't been there a shear of Kavisha, then it's not a problem. Okay. So anyway, so now, back to the story. So the story came to Rav, and Rav asked it. Rav prohibited drinking the beer. So the Gemara now says the following. Amrua Rabbanon Kameh de Rav Sheshes. The Rabbanon, the Talmidim in the Beis Medrash, told the story over in front of Rav Sheshes, and they said, Neima, should we say, Kosavar, no Saint Tam of Kam is Asar. Their assumption was that a mouse in beer is no Saint Tam of Kam. I have no idea whether that's true or not. And Rav holds that no Saint Tam of Kam is Asar, like the Shita of Rabbi Meir, that if the Isser has a negative impact upon the flavor of the heter, you're still not allowed to eat it, as long as you can taste the impact of the isser. That's what they wanted to know. That's what they asked of Sheshes.
If we find something that's disgusting, even if it theoretically enhances the taste, most people are going to avoid it, because they're just disgusted by the... it's pogum because it's disgusted. It's disgusting. And that's why people are, they're not interesting. The next step to find out is its better flavor. I mean, they're going to pass on this.
So hold on. let's see where the Gemara goes with this. Yeah. One of the things that sort of keep in mind here, and Rashi only kind of hints to this, in the Gemara's discussion, the assumption is that this stuff is disgusting. It's about to say this is disgusting. A mouse tastes disgusting even in its own right. Now, the truth is this is very, very much cultural. It's very much cultural. In other words, I think most of us, and probably, maybe I'm wrong, but most Americans, the idea of eating insects is revolting. I think so. I mean, I don't think it's just a from Jewish thing. Many people may not care whether there's a bug or two, that they can't see in their lettuce.
It's Americans. It's a cultural thing.
Right, it's a cultural thing. We don't eat certain kinds of creatures. I don't think people in this country generally consume mouse meat. But there are other cultures in which this is perfectly normal. I suspect that if you, you know, if you cut up the meat and you didn't tell the person what it is, they might taste and say, oh, this is delicious, what is this? And you tell them mouse meat and they, you know,
throw up.
Something right. like that, right. right. So
if something is culturally revolting, is it does that make the food that it mixes into revolting?
So I think that if you know, if someone were to tell you that this mouse, I don't know the answer to that question, but if someone were to tell you that there is mouse stuff mixed into this thing, you would probably consider it revolting. And if it gave Tom, we might call that no same Tom of gum.
So if that's true, then even horse meat. If that's true, then even things like, horse meat, if that becomes revolting, then that should, if that mixes in, that should be pogan right from the start.
Yes.
Oh, and that, well, wait a minute. And what's it, even if it comes, in other words, so there are even things in the Torah that, maybe at its time it was considered something that wanted to eat, but now it's not something that wanted to eat.
Just wait a sec. Let's read the next line in the Gemara. So Amar the Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes says to him, no. But Amar Sava Rav no Saint Tam of Gan is Mutter. No, Rav agrees with the Rabbi Shimon's position that if the Isser detracts from the flavor of the heter when it falls in, then you're allowed to consume it. The Hacha is an exception. Chiddushu. No, mouse is a chiddush. Why? People generally consider mouse revolting. People don't eat it. And nonetheless, the Torah prohibits it.
That's the opposite of Shulcha Meikara.
Hilkach, no same time of Kam, Nami is Asar. In other words, if a mouse that should be considered almost Shulcha Meikara, like inedible from the start, and yet the Torah prohibits it, despite the fact that under the ordinary rules of no same time of Kam, it would be permitted. So then, presumably, it's no better off when it falls into the tavshil. If by mouse, the Torah says, no saint talmud gam is usur, so that's true when the mouse is be'en, when it's extant, and you're not allowed to eat it that way. And it's true when it flavors your food. In other words, no saint talmud gam of chazir might be permitted, and of gumal flesh might be permitted, and of a whole host of things might be permitted, but no saint talmud gam of mouse is usur, because mouse itself is no saint, is pagum, is srucha meikar. That seems to be what the Gemara is saying here. Rashi has a very different take on what chiddush here, but the chiddush means
so
here.
So, could we ever reach a point where something like after 30 centuries of abstaining from pig, if pig falls into kosher meat, people already are disgusted by that idea. And the Easter itself made it mouse. The Easter caused us to be disgusted by it. 30 years of Jews not eating pig made a surcha meikara out of the pig.
Well, it wouldn't matter because the Torah prohibited it anyway.
No, it was at the time of the Torah, that was not the case. It was only after 30 centuries of the Isur that
Sam, now it became
Isur. I'm
going to answer the question the way I feel like I'll answer the question.
Well,
we haven't reached that stage yet, so I don't know what will be. Well, I'll leave that.
No, we had 3,000 years of not, a lot of people, if they know that something not kosher is mixed in to what's kosher, that's stuff, they're disgusted by it.
So I think most people in our society, and I'm going to leave it at this, they even would eat pig, so, and you didn't tell them, they wouldn't think it was disgusting. I think most, well, I would say, if they ate pig, they wouldn't think it was disgusting. They might not want to go for it in the first place, but if they tasted it, it might be fine. I suspect that the cultural inhibition over rodents is far greater that it would be a much harder threshold to climb. But that's what the Gemara says right now.
Anyway.
That's what it said. That Rav, maybe Rav holds that really Achbar B'Shichra is no Saint of Kan. But it's prohibited because Achbar is generally Pogum. That's what the Gemara, that's what Rav Sheshes suggests. So the Gemara then says, Elameata, Amulei Rabbanon Rav Sheshes, Elameata, if it's true that a mouse is really considered pogum in the first place. It's mimas ma'is and bedili in shemine, and nonetheless, the Torah prohibits it. So then, to tame lach v'yavish. It should be tame both when it's moist, when it's still, fresh, versus if it's desiccated. If it's totally dried out through and through, the assumption is that it no longer conveys toma. Normally, a mouse, which is, it seems, assuming that's what achbar really is, it's one of the Shmona Shratzim mentioned in the Torah. One of the eight Shratzim, the creepy crawly creatures, they're mostly actually little reptiles, lizards, but a couple might be rodents, that are listed in the Torah. And the Torah has a special halacha by these particular animals, that when they die, they convey tumah, but only through touching them. There are two unique things. If I have a cow that dies, there are two ways to contract tumah from that cow, or a donkey that's dead. One is by touching it, maga, and carrying one is by carrying it, masa. However, the shmona shratzim, the eight shratzim, are only defile with maga, but they have a second law, a second unique law, which is astringency. The shear, in order to get malchus, to get lashes, for eating a dead behema, a chazir, a chamor, is a kazayas. The shear, and for tumah. The shear for eating and for tumah of one of the shmona shratzim is ka'adasha, like a lentil, smaller than a kazayas. They're lentils, and even if their kazayasim were much bigger than ours, so their lentils were still smaller than their kazayasim. Certainly the relative, I'm kidding when I say that, but the relative size hasn't changed. So the Gemara says that if you believe that a sheretz, an achbar, is no same tam lefgam in its own right, and nonetheless the Torah prohibits it, then the ordinary rules, in other words, the Torah is basically saying this inedible thing is considered edible for our purposes, and you get malchus if you eat it. And therefore, the normal rules of tumah also should not apply. And even though normally, in order to be metame, the sheretz still has to have moisture in it, if it's totally dried out and desiccated, it no longer conveys tumah. It may not be also to eat it anymore either. So, but certainly it doesn't convey tumah. Let's say that. Maybe you can't eat it. So the Gemara says, if the Torah doesn't apply the ordinary rules to eating by sheretz, then maybe the rules of tumah don't apply either. Now, so that's what the Amoraim said. That's what the Talmidim said to Rosh Hashanah. So he responded and said to them, "Ulatameich, based upon what you're suggesting, that just because something is people, the way Rashi said, would stay away from it, and nonetheless, the Torah suggests that it conveys tumah. Ulitameh shichva zera titameh lach v'yavesh. Semen, which is conveys tumah, is only mitameh when it's still moist, when it's roi lahazriah, when it's still suitable for fertilizing, for conception. So, and nonetheless, alama tanan, why have we been taught in the Mishnah, mitameh lach v'meh mitameh yavesh? So why is it there? Again, the way Rashi explains, it's a very strange question. If you want to argue that something that people don't want to go near, so why should the Torah have to tell us not to touch it? Of course we know not. People don't touch it anyway, so why would the Torah institute a prohibition? So the Gemara says, so if that were the case, once the Torah institutes the prohibition, it shouldn't matter whether it's lach v'yavesh. It's a very odd question. The answer the Gemara gives sort of solves the problem, but it still leaves you wondering. We've shown him struggle a little bit, what was the question in the first place. The Gemara says, Ela, mayis lecha lemeimar, shichva zera amar rachmana, b'ru'uya lahazriya. When the Torah describes v'ishki seitzei mimenu shichva zera, or if he touches shichva zera, it's described as shichva zera. It has to be ra'oi lehazriya. It has to be ra'oi for zera. So hachinami, when the Torah describes the tumah associated with these eight shratzim, the Torah says bimosam, v'chola sheiga bohem bimosam, in their death or in their dying, is the way they're reading it here, shall become tamei. So Kain Mosam, it has to be like they were when they died. And when an animal dies, it's not desiccated. It has a strong moisture. It was just almost alive. And therefore, the Torah says it's only mitame Kain Mosam. So basically, when it comes to Tumah Vatara, it's Xeris HaKosav. But that doesn't mean, that could still be, that when it comes to eating, the Torah really did not need to prohibit eating mouse. The fact that it does prohibit eating mouse means that no same time of gum is always usher by those things. That's what Rav Sheshes has suggested for Rav. So then, Maskif la Rav Shimi min Arda. Rav Shimi min Arda asks a different question. He says, Umi ma'is, is that true? V'halo olal shulchan shamalachim. Mouse is served on king's table. I don't think at the presidential, the White House, official state dinners, they have mouse on the menu. So the Gemara answers, Amar Rashimi min Ahardo, he answers his own question, Lokasha, Habe de Davra, Habe de Masa. Depends whether it's the Davra. Davra is the Bavli Aramaic word for field. And Masa is the city. So Rashi says the mouse of the Masa is Achbar Shal Yishuv is Mois. It's disgusting. Whereas Achbar the Davra, Rashi says, a squirrel balaz. Okay, it sounds like he's talking about a squirrel. Okay, so I don't know what squirrels taste like, but I wouldn't mind more dead squirrels in my backyard. All right. So anyway, so that's where the Gemara, at least the possibility that Rab actually held that way. Now, Lemaisa, as we're going to see, this doesn't actually really stand, in the sense that in Shulchan Aruch we don't assume, well, by mice, by most of those things, we don't assume that they're automatically no sin tam of gam. Theoretically, it's subject to really a taste test. One of the Rishonim asks, I think it's Tosis asked somewhere, why don't they just ask a kfela to taste it, whether it tastes l'shvach or not? Of course, my answer would have been, because they couldn't find the kfela who was willing to do it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when they came up to me in the Beis Medrash to offer me some asafetita, I said, I feel like this is, there's a part of me that feels like I'm not supposed to do this, it's like some prank you're pulling on me. So you go to the kfela and you ask him, here, would you like to taste some? The assumption, it's a fairly limited principle in terms of rodents, I think, but it does come up in the context of bugs. The Shulchan Aruch does assume, although realistically speaking it's not an issue anyway, that bugs are no sein tam lufgam in mixture. You can't eat the bug when it's whole, because that's the issur d'oraisa of eating a bug, and it could be, you can even get malchus on less than a shear on a whole bug, is a beria, if you eat a complete ant, so you get malchus for that, even though it's less than a kazayas, because it's a beria shlema, it's a complete creature. But if it falls into your mixture, and then you remove it, even if it cooked in there, the assumption is, it's always no same time of gam, and some Rishonim will go as far as to say, that if the insect is whole, then we have a problem. We have a separate problem, that it's a beria, right? That's the issue with vegetables sometimes today. The concern is over a whole bug. And a beria is not betela. It's only nisa de rabbanon when you eat it in your salad, because you're not actually eating the bug outright. But nonetheless, there is an nisa de rabbanon in theory. A beria is not betela under certain circumstances. But what were to happen, assuming that, you know, the bugs in your tavshil were broken up. Okay, they're no longer whole. So then, you only have to be mevatel the tam. So a number that we've shown him say here is that it's batel barov. Even if you have a kezias bitoch kedeach hilas pras, which was 1/6, 1/8, of the tavshil is bugs, you're still allowed to eat it as long as there's a majority of heter. I'm fairly confident that no one in our circles would even consider eating it when you had that proportion of bugs in there. Again, I'm not sure how many of us would eat it at all if we knew there were bugs in there, but certainly a proportion of even less than a kazakh with achilas pras would be excessive and we would get rid of the tavshil. But that's what the Shulchan Aruch says when it comes to bugs. It says that the little creatures we consider mice, we consider no sein tam lufgam. I actually have no idea what the impact they have in the tavshil. Realistically also, in most of our tavshilin, bugs are not going to be, you're not going to have 1/60 of bugs. Right, the tam, even without that leniency of the Rishonim, you're not going to have 1/60, so that won't be an issue. The only issue we really deal with in terms of bugs is if the bug fell in its hole and we're not, and we are concerned that maybe it wasn't broken up. Again, the kind of bug that would actually present a problem. I'll add in this context, intertwined with bugs, that I think when I was growing up, not too many people were terribly concerned about bugs in their vegetables. It's only in the last 15 to 20 years where this has become a certain kind of hysteria. Some have wanted to argue, well, would they use fewer pesticides today, so there are more bugs. If you read the Aruch HaShulchan dealing with this topic in, I think, Simen Kuf, it is amply clear, and you don't need the Aruch HaShulchan to know this, that they were eating foods in Europe, and their foods were infested with bugs. And the poskim explained why it was mutter. Compared to what they had, you can't find bugs in our food. So the notion that all of a sudden, you know, we have bugs that didn't exist before is, to my mind, a very, very questionable premise. And if I thought there were bugs in most of the stuff I was eating, I personally wouldn't be eating it. But yes, Larry?
So you wouldn't put it under a microscope is what you're...
That's sort of a given. I don't think you need a light box for it either. You know, there are certain kinds of vegetables that certainly you should wash. But my experience, and people may have different experiences, but when they send out the thing, oh, you know, like the blueberries or this, I look at them and said, there are no bugs in Moai. Now, maybe if I took a microscope, but that's irrelevant. The halacha doesn't care what you see in this context under a microscope.
So is the halacha only what you can visibly see with your eye?
Yes. That's a clear.
That's the guideline.
That's the Dover Pashut, yes. That's a starting point. That's the starting point. That may not be the ending point. If you take, you can read the passage in the Aruch HaShulchan, you'll see what our holy ancestors did.
What did it say? Simon what?
Why the
ship? Simon Kof, I believe. Ilan, is it Simon Kof? The end of Simon Kof. Yes, I'm sorry. What was your?
So why the traumatic ship? Just the shift of the times?
I think so.
I mean, the supermarket in Israel.
I think so. When the OU came out with a particular policy some 10, 15 years ago, maybe a little longer than that. So the Marad Asr from Mashul got up and said, you know, he was kind of half defending sort of the policy, at least that applied in the shul. And he said, you know, the OU is not the Badatz. And then, yes, but some of us turned to each other and said, yes, but they're starting to sound more and more like the Badatz. So I can't explain why, but I don't think that the situation has in our produce has substantially changed from 50 years ago. There is certain kinds of produce, but certain kinds of organic produce is something probably should be checked. But most of the stuff that you know, start from the berries, it's like, really. I mean, I go and I look, not so much because I think you need to look, but am I missing something? And it's like, really? So maybe, again, I may not have rabbinic supervision so much, so I don't know. But not to the best that I can tell, even looking with my glasses. So
what are you sowing, Khan? In other words,
I can see.
In Europe, you're saying.
I don't want to talk about it. The Aruch HaShulchan goes through a whole series of explanations, one of which actually comes up from some of the Rishon later in the sugya. So we may not get, I don't know if we'll get to it today, but there's a Yerushalmi talking about a kind of bittul with the achbar, with the bugs, and some of the Rishonim read it one way, but other Rishonim read it differently, because the Yerushalmi says it has bittul be'elef, actually 960. So there is a shita, based upon the Yerushalmi, that a beria is betela in 960. So I don't know if you would have 960, but that's one of the shitas that the Aruch HaShulchan quotes. You have to remember, you're dealing with here the whole issue in the first place. Not that we should make light of Yisurim Derabanan, but we are much more lenient when it comes to Yisurim Derabanan. The whole question here is an Issa Derabanan. In other words, Midaraisa, the bug is Batel. Even you don't have you certainly have Shishim. That's not an issue. Tom is not a concern because you don't have Shishim. Even if you didn't have Shishim, we know that we're not concerned about the Tom. And the only issue is that Beria is Lo Betela. If the bug is completely intact, that's an Issa D'Rabbanan. So if you know there's a bug there, a bug that would qualify for this, and there are a lot of issues that go into this, that would be one thing. But even so, the Aruch HaShulchan presents a number of defenses and explanations defending Minhag Yisrael. And our produce is most certainly much, much cleaner than their produce was. So, okay. Yes. So now, the Gemara continues with the following statement. Amar Rava, second wide line near the end, on the bottom of Samach Chesamah Beis. Amar Rava, Hilchasa Nosein Tam Lefgam is Motem. We paskin, that's very clear. No Saint Tom of Gam is not a problem. The less Achra b'shichra, in the case of a mouse in the beer, lo yadana my time the Rav. I don't know what Rav's reason was. Imishrim the kasavar, no Saint Tom of Gam is aser. Rav held that no Saint Tom is aser. In which case, the less hilchasak avasei, even if the mouse was decomposing in the beer, Marshal, you'd still be allowed to consume the beer, or. No, Rav does paskin the way we hold. However, that the mouse and beer actually does improve the taste. It'll be the new, you know, one of these craft beers you're going to have. Mouse beer. Okay.
In the bottle, you see the mouse.
Okay. Oh, it's like the worm in tequila, right? There you go. Fine. So that's left up. And the Shulchan Aruch, not surprisingly, is machmir by two liquids of a suffix that may be a mouse. The Mechaber Pasuk is a mouse in beer and in vinegar, which we're about to get to. Everything else the Mechaber assumes is not a problem, but the Ramah quotes those who were concerned if it fell into fat, I guess tallow, but kosher tallow. People would save the fat from their various dishes. They would pour it into their fat collecting dish, and then somebody. The Ramah talks about this case. I forget which one of the Rishonim has this. And then all of a sudden, you come in and you find a mouse in there, and you remember you're pouring hot stuff, and you're not sure when you poured was would the mouse fall in when the stuff was hot or cold. And that's some very long, complicated Ramah in Simon Kuf Dalet in Yoredeya. So the Rama says, so there are those who held that no, this could be a concern even beyond these two liquids. But the Rama says, in a Malcolm Hefsid Meruba, if there's great loss involved, then you can be lenient to assume that it's only in beer and vinegar that it's an issue. So now we're going to talk about the vinegar. But that's where Rava leaves this particular issue. Okay. So take a look for a moment. I don't want to read the Tosfos first asks the question, how could the Gemara not know what Rav's opinion was about no saying Talmud Gam? I'm not going to read it, but there's one very important halacha that doesn't detail that emerges from it. Tosfos points out that there's a Gemara in the first parak of Chulin that says that if you shecht an animal with a sakin, a treif knife, meaning it's a shechita knife, but it was used with treif stuff. So the Gemara has a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel whether or not the knife can actually make stuff, the animal's neck, the meat in the neck, whether it can create a kashrus problem there. And Rav says you actually have to peel away a layer around which the knife came in contact with. Shmuel holds it enough to rinse it off. And Tosa says, well, isn't that no sin tam of gam? Because most knives are not b'nei yoman. They haven't been used within 24 hours. So even if you shechted your animal with this treif knife, it shouldn't be a problem in the meat. So Tosfos proposes, so you see that Rav holds, no saying Talmud Gam is prohibited. So that should answer Rava's question here. So Tosfos gives two answers. One, he says, is maybe it's dealing with a case where we know that the shechita knife was used within 24 hours, so it's not no saying Talmud Gam. The other explanation, which is the one that's more relevant, is Tosfos says that the concern may not be about absorptions in the knife, but actually shamnunis, fat, or fat-like material that's sort of crusted on the knife that was never really fully cleaned off. And Tosso says that whenever you're dealing with be'em, something that's extant, not something that's absorbed into the pores of the vessels, you cannot assume automatically that after 24 hours, it is no sein talmud gam. No sein talmud gam is only automatically assumed on the blios, not on something that is be'em, is actually extant and visible. So that's one very important halacha. Then if you look in this Tosfos, it's the one that starts in the bottom of Samachesim Beis and goes over to the top. So when the lines get narrow in Tosfos on the fifth line, so I mentioned this question before, Tosfos says, V'im tomar, maika amar hacha lo yadana I ashpuche mashpach, lita mek fela arama. Ask a guy to taste it, and they'll tell you whether mouse improves the flavor of beer. So Tosa says, "V'yishlomar d'shema achbara b'shichra mechazek es hashechar u'mechamtzo, v'hashta k'shenischazek hashechar ein yodei emachmas hashechar atzma." So Tosa suggests that maybe mouse has the effect of almost a catalyst, causing the beer to turn even more alcohol, momachmitz, I guess. And we don't know, the kfela is not going to know whether or not the reason why it tastes more beery, more alcoholic, which is a good thing apparently, is because of the mouse or just because of the beer on its own. So there's no way for the kfela to be able to determine. He can taste that the beer might taste more alcoholic, but he's not going to know why it became so. And therefore, Tosfos is saying that a kfela just won't work here. He's not able to distinguish. And then Tosfos
Well, it must have made it worse, right?
What?
It must have made it worse.
That's true. But Tosfos is assuming, he would be assuming. Right. He's almost playing it against neutral. Right. And neutral, I assume that neutral, if it has no impact, that's also mutter, like no sin tam of God. I would have argued, in fact, neutral is even better than no sin tam of gam. Because no sin tam of gam, at least there's no sin tam. Right? But neutral is not no sin tam. So that's the first point, second point, so third. V'kai malan kirava da'amar no sin tam of gam mutar af bishratzim v'naf gamina d'chasheino bas yomo v'chayotze bo mutar af bishratzim. In other words, we hold like Rava that there's no chumra of no sein talmud of gam by shratzim, and therefore, if you're dealing with the sheretz, certainly after 24 hours, it is not a problem at all. Within 24 hours, at least, you have to raise the possibility maybe it's not no sein talmud of gam. But after 24 hours, one would assume that it's no sein talmud of gam. Okay, that's the first step. Now the Gemara says Yibai Elihu, the last two words on the bottom of Samachas, the base. Nofal legochala mai. if the mouse fell not into beer, but into vinegar, then my Rashi says, Mi amrin on the top Rashi, Achometz tam okosha, the ein hasheretz mifigo, loses botam. Maybe the vinegar, the taste is so powerful that the sheretz doesn't even have the capacity to sort of overcome it and to flavor it. Amar le Rav Hillel le Rav Ashi. Hava uvda be Rav Kahana. There was a case that happened in Rav Kahana's house. V'asa Rav Kahana. So you see that mouse can flavor vinegar, and presumably at least the suffix might be nosetam l'shvach. So Amar le Rav Ashi responded, no, that story is no proof. Hahu imartute imartit. Now, what does this word mean? So the term, the root memresh tas, I don't know if it occurs more than once in Chumash that I can think of, but it occurs once. V'ish ki yimareit rosho. A person goes bald, his hair falls out. So it sounds like one possibility of imartute imartit is that the hair falls off the mouse. Now, that's not the way Rashi explains, but that's what the Rishonim prefer, and there are two ways of understanding that. One possibility is offered by the Ravid. It's cited by the Ran, and the Ravid says that the part of the mouse that would cause the beer or the vinegar to taste terrible is the hair. And if the hair had been removed, and it's only mouse meat, so then for sure that would be no sin tam l'shvach. That is one explanation he offers in the name of the Ravid. The other interpretation that the Ran offers.
So, no questions.
I guess people are not very very happy about that.
So what is Rashi saying?
Well, I want to come back to Rashi. What is Rashi? Rashi is much harder to understand. The Ran quotes a suggestion, and Marshall, this might be almost along the lines of what you were saying earlier. If the mouse soaked in the beer or in vinegar so long that the hair came off, so I'll quote you the Ran. He says, "V'chevan dechazinon deshoha tuva." Since we see that it has been there a very long time, ika lemechash dilma churfe dechala. The sharpness of the vinegar mahader le the time of the shvach. It turns the tam of the mouse into shvach because it was there a really long time. It's not the mouse is a davar charev, but the vinegar is a davar charev. So both that interpretation and the Ravid are working on the assumption imartute imartit means that the hair came off the mouse. For the Ravid, it would almost be the hair came off the mouse before it fell into the vinegar. Whereas for the Ran, no, it fell off because it was in the vinegar so long, and there's a concern of the vinegar turning the tam l'shvach. But and those two interpretations, okay, fine. Rashi says something which is very difficult to understand. Rashi says imartute imartit lachatichos dakos kitanos. It's like the sheretz got sliced. Achbar got sliced up. However, it got sliced up, it fell apart into very little pieces. And Rashi says, "V'chayshina and dilma bolea, and the sheretz isuro becha'adasha kitumaso." The sheer iser of eating sheretz is a lentil size, the same amount that makes you tummy, not a kazayis, less than a kazayis. "V'chayshina and dilma bolea chaticha sheretz b'hadei chometz." I'm afraid that when you're consuming the vinegar, you're going to swallow chaticha sheretz. So the Rishonim are bothered by this. What's going on here? After all, well, the question is, are you able to distinguish the pieces or not? If you can distinguish them, presumably you can filter them. And we would probably say, if we do say, there's a Din the Ramah quotes, let's say you have some fatty substance that, I don't know, falls into the soup, and it's less than 1/60th. But the Ramah says that if the chatchila is supposed to cool the soup so that the fat, the tray fat, congeals, and then you skim out the tray. In other words, to the extent that you're able to, even though it's batel, if you are able to extract the iser, whatever amount you can extract, you extract that. Now, I think there's a Bach who says, if you can extract it, then even if there was more than 1/60th, it's mutter. We don't hold that way. We assume, we never know how much flavor is there, but you need 60. But once you have shishim, once you have 60 times permitted food, to be mevatel, the prohibited food, if you can remove whatever part of the prohibited food you can remove, you're supposed to do that. So if you can filter this, and presumably you should filter it. But otherwise, if you can, so what's the whole point is that the little pieces are batel. And why does it matter per se that the shear of a sheretz is b'chadasha? And after all, even if the shear were a kazayas, as the Rishonim point out, chatzi shear is aser min haTorah. Right? If I take a half a kazayas of pork and I eat it, I don't get malchus because it's not a shear kazayas. But we paskin like Rabbi Yochanan that eating half a shear, eating a chatzi shear is an issur d'oraisa. There's no malchus with it, but it's still aser min haTorah. So it's not clear from Rashi why the fact that the shear of a sheretz is b'chadasha. Uh-oh. Says the memory's full. Let me get the last part.
True for many of us.
Speak for yourself.
About the second half, we'll have to splice them together. So what's the significance that the shear of a sheretz is b'chadasha? We assume that once the thing is mixed into other things, even if this is shir chadasha, nonetheless, it's still not going to be, it shouldn't be osir. So some want to say within Rashi that actually Rashi is making a claim here. The reason why the shir of a sheretz is chadasha, if I'm not mistaken, I think they quote this, is that the Gemara has a statement that tchilas biryoso of shratzim is b'chadasha. I don't know what exactly that means, but it means like the most formative stage of a sheretz is with a shear of kadasha. I mean, I don't understand that because I assume cells build up, but you know, from one cell to two cells to four, etc., and so on. So I don't know what that means, but they say that tchilas b'riyasa of the sheretz is b'chadasha, and therefore it might be that ordinarily to have the status of a beria of a whole living creature, you need the whole living creature with all its parts. But maybe by a sheretz, because the special shear of kadasha, that any kadasha of a sheretz, even if it's any not part, the whole lizard or the whole mouse, is still considered a beria. And therefore, if the piece of flesh is intact, it's not like ground up in a way that it's no longer nikar as a sheretz, then it's like having a whole bug inside your thing. And that's what Rashi meant by imartute imartus. But it's a very, very difficult Rashi to understand. Whatever the answer, whichever one of these three approaches in the Rishonim you like, either that it was no stein tam l'shvach because the hair fell off before it got in, or we're afraid that maybe it's no stein tam l'shvach because it was there so long and that the sharpness of the vinegar turns into a positive flavor, or because there's still some kadasha left in there. Whatever the reason is, so Rav Ashi said that's why they prohibited eating it. But really, it's not that it's not saying tam l'shvach. Ordinarily, it would be batel. Marshall?
I mean, it may be that since obviously the larvae of insects is very small, it's actually not so unreasonable because you can't act, you know, when you're dealing with a mammal, even a mouse, it's pretty obvious sort of what's an embryo, what's a whole mammal. But when you're dealing with insects, you know, very frequently, and it's also actually pretty disgusting, you know, you can have millions of little eggs in one sac, or, you know, where the larvae is kept. That actually could be sort of a totality of a sheretz in a very sort of sub-lentil size thing. Second, as you...
Where would it be a lentil size? And where would be... Are you just suggesting that in order to be called tchilas b'riyasa, it has to be a little bit nikar, that it looks like, you know, that you would say that that's a sheretz already? Is that what you mean?
No. I'm saying in any part of a sheretz, there could be a larvae sac that is smaller than a lentil. Why the minute you have any lentil-sized piece, you have to have a chashash.
No, I don't think that can... A larvae of what in a sheretz? Of insects?
Of future shrutzim. It's a larva sac.
Uh-huh. Is that how reptiles reproduce?
Well, reptiles are only a couple of the shrutzim category.
No. Outside of maybe the achbar and the atal... Is Atalif mentioned there? Yeah, it's mentioned in the birds in here. The others are all like lizards. Chameleon, a gecko.
Oh, so it's not bugs at all.
No. We learn from... If shvatzim are ma'usim, we will learn... And whatever the dinim will apply to bugs. And we have a suffix whether an achbar in the beer is good or no good. And maybe we have a suffix about the, you know, the geico gecko as well. But bugs,
right.
And the Shachar says, no, bugs are disgusting. So no, we're talking, the Shvatzim are all, again, they're mostly lizards of one kind.
They do lay eggs.
No, correct. Right. So I don't know what it means, but using that, that's the logic they use to explain Rashi. Okay. So now the Gemara says something very odd havamina. So they haven't figured out the piece yet. Let's wait on this. I want to do one more thing in Tosfos. Tosfos asked a question. How do we eat honey? Why? Because apparently, I never looked. I'm not going to look. Probably it's not in our honey because they're probably careful to try to filter it.
Oh, yeah.
Bees legs. Bees legs. So the question is, how are you allowed to eat it? If you, and they certainly had this as an issue. How are you allowed to eat it? So on the Tosus Dibur Maschil, Hahu Imartute Imartate. So Tosus doesn't even bother about asking on Rashi here. They raise a different issue. They say, Yesh L'tmoa Achshav, Heich Anu Ochlem Dvash Devorim. How do we eat bees honey? V'halo Ragle HaDevorim U'ravim Midvash. And it's probably hard to filter honey, actually. The Afal Gav V'Havei Pegam Mikomakom Hasheretz Atzmo De'ifkam Mitzar L'chulei Alma. Yeah, to talk about if it flavors, but you're talking about actually the pieces of the sheretz itself that you can see, how are you allowed to eat it? So lochei nira l'rabbeinu tam, devadai ragle ha-devorim, kevon da'atzamos bi'alma ninhu mutar. The ha-atzamos tahorim. Tosa says, you know the atzamos, bones, non-marrow-filled bones of pigs, for example, if there's no marrow in them, they're inedible, and they're not even usable for gelatin. The whole point is the gelatin, I think, comes from parts of the bone that are not quite solid bone, thing. But bones, Tosu says, you're allowed to eat, and they're tahorim. They don't convey tuma. The tram b'meseches yodayim atzmos hachamor tahorus. The donkey bones are tahor. The ragle hatavorim are ka'atzmos hachamor. Okay. So Tosu says that the bee's legs have the same status as donkey bones, and therefore there's no problem of eating the bee's legs when they're in the honey. According to Tosus, then, if you filtered out the bees' legs, you should be able to eat them as well. I doubt anybody would do that. I'm sure anybody, if you could and would filter out the bees' legs, then you would just throw them out or something. But okay, that's how Tosus was bothered by this possibility, as opposed to, and Tosus just says, bees' legs are not actually also to consume.
Hmm.
Okay. So then the Gemara continues with a very hard to understand Hava Mina Ravina. Ravina Savar the Sha'ur B'Me'a V'Chad. Ravina thought to be Mevatel in vinegar, the mouse, if you had 101 times. Omar, and if you wanted to assume it was a problem, and you should have Bithel of 101. Omar, Logora Mitruma. The Tanan, Truma Ola V'Echad Rumea. In order to be Mevatel Truma, you need 100 Heter Keneged, the one of Isser. So I'm not going to explore what the answer is here. I'm just going to, because the Gemara is going to reject this. But it's a very, very odd suggestion. Because when we talk about Truma requiring 100, we're talking about min bimino only. If you have Truma that falls into something else, if it falls into something with a different flavor, we use the standard rules of Bittel, standard rule of Shishim. If you can't taste it, it's permitted. The only time we say that Truma requires 100, that Orlo and Kiloi HaKerem require 200, that Yayinesech in the Mishnah require that no amount can be Vatel, that's only by Min Bimino. By Min B'Sheino Mino, it's the regular rules of No Saint Tom. So it's a very odd analogy to make. You're trying to figure out, does the Sheretz impart a flavor and a positive flavor to the vinegar, and you're saying, well, let's use the shear of 101.
But maybe he wants you to give the Sheretz as Truma.
Okay, so
it's a thought.
So the Gemara then responds.
That was the true test of how Mevutel was. You brought the god of all the shruts in, and you said they were already, you know.
Yeah, here it is.
You have okay.
Vatel, it's like its grave.
Okay, so the Gemara responds. Amalei Rav Tavchlika Bar Giza LaRavina Dilma Ketavlan Shel Truma BeKedera Dami DeLobatel Tamayu. So the response is, it's hard to know if this response is a serious response. He says, well, once you're going to say that you want to treat it like truma, you know, regular truma is batel when you have 100 because it's a blend. But what if I had tavlin shel truma? I had truma spices. Truma spices that fall into cholin, presumably of a different taste, a different kind. So truma spices are not batel. Now, Tosus points out, it doesn't mean that they're not batel. It means they're not typically batel b'shishim or mea. In other words, if I take salt, and I put salt into my pot, or some other strong spice, I take a very strong spice into my pot, you might only put in 1/300th, and you can taste it already. That's the whole point. Spices, and we measure iser v'heter by volume. So you don't require a whole lot of volume of the spices in order to flavor the pot. And if that's the case, then why, he's saying to Ravina, well, once you want to say that, if you're looking for a big shear, I have a bigger shear for you. So well, he says that it's not batel, but it doesn't mean it's not batel at all, but it means you could have a much larger shear. So the Gemara then goes on and basically it ignores this and says the following, Rav Achai shear b'chala b'chamshin. He felt that 50 was enough. Rashi said that since the taste of the vinegar was very powerful, you didn't need 60 times to be mevat al the achbar. However, Rav Shmuel bereid Rav Ika shear b'shichra b'shitin. He used a shear of 60. The hilchasa idi v'idi b'shitin. We paskin that 60 by vinegar by beer. V'chein kol isur in shabbatara. Now, this, by the way, is the only Gemara I believe in Shas that most clearly identifies shishim. There's one other sugya, but this is the only sort of expansive totality that says that shishim is the standard shear. Remember that in the Mishnayos, the shear of shishim doesn't exist. It's always called no sein tam. And even for the many of the Amoraim, they use the term no sein tam. The Gemara in Gira Nasha starts to talk about shishim already as a shear, but it's not. It's not clear that it's a universal shear. This Gemara, sort of in passing, in the last line, the Chen Kol Yisur and Shabbat Torah, establishes the default shear of Shishim. And again, many Rishonim, the way we Paskin would say in principle, if you know, if you had a Kfela tasted, and you didn't have 60, but the Kfela told you, the professional or non-professional, even maybe, cook told you that you can't taste the food, you wouldn't require Shishim. And if it was a very powerful flavoring food, you would require more than Shishim, but this basically is the line in the Gemara that sort of serves as the basis for a very broad notion of shishim.
What is the shishim based on? Is there some sort of a...
So if I'm not mistaken, that is the Gemara. Gemara Hulin says that the Chachamim were Mishaer, and I forget what used, like Kibasa or Belefes, and they saw that typically things are not flavor anything less than that. Basar and lefes, the meat and the turnips, and I believe the Gemara explicitly identifies the shear of shishim there. Right, well, and here the Gemara says this is the general klal. Now, one last interesting thing here. If you take a look at Tosos Dibor Maschil, Edi v'Edi, it's on the second line where the lines get really wide in Tosos. Mm-hmm. Tosos writes the following. Perish b'shichra v'chala b'shitin. Fine. B'halachos gedolos v'yushalmi kamar the sheretz lo batel ki im be'elef.
1,000.
You need 1,000 to be batel sheretz. V'talmudenu ikar, the batel b'shishim kishari sir. Now, the way this Tosus read the Yushalmi, they understood that the bittel of a sheretz be'elef is the bittel of a tam of sheretz be'elef. And the number is not actually 1,000, it's actually 960. But there are other Rishonim. I think if you look, for starters, in the Hagos Ashri, the little print printed on the side of the Rush, it's not by the Rush, I forget who wrote the Hagos Ashri. So they understand this Yerushalmi, and the Beis Yosef quotes this very briefly. He doesn't accept it. That the Yerushalmi is stating that a beria has bittel in 960, not flavor. If the animal is broken up, or if you pull most of the animal out, not a problem. That is bittel b'shishim. The Yerushalmi is not arguing that. The Yerushalmi is claiming that a beria is bittela once you get the karov le'elef. Even though we assume, at least the Bavli doesn't state that explicitly, and the Shulchan Aruch, certainly the Shulchan Aruch doesn't paskin that way. The Shulchan Aruch assumes that Beria is not Betela, period. Nonetheless, that's how some Rishonim read that Yerushalmi, that Beria is Betela, it's Shameos Veshishim. Okay, but for the moment, our assumption is that certainly our Gemara is talking about Bitul Hatam. If the Yerushalmi is also talking about that, we don't paskin like the Yerushalmi because we paskin like the Bavli always against the Yerushalmi. And the question of Beria is for a separate discussion. Any questions?
So is it, about the legs of the bee. Do we paskin? Is that something that halachically, if we see the actual legs, that it's perfectly permissible?
I don't. I'm pretty sure it doesn't say anything in Shulchan Aruch, in the classic Yerideh stuff. I'm sure it may say in Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos. I don't know Shvatzim, but I haven't learned all of that, so I've never encountered it.
Okay, shkoch. Very good.
Shkoch. Now you know.
Yes.
If you see...
You're going to need bugs?
No, if you actually see...
If Riva can...